So that's pretty great. It's probably a little odd that a guy with no kid and a guy with just one kid, who's only 9 months old, have decided to do a podcast about becoming parents.
Let's get that awkwardness just right out.
I guess hubris is the only reason. That's the only... We just assumed we could.
Yeah, well, and Brock and I have known each other since 2009, and the number of times we've almost died from hubris is... more than a dozen, not less.
So yeah, might as well just get right into this. 2, 3, 4. Oh my God, I'm having a baby. I knew this day would come to finally save and teach me love and how to stay. Yeah, so let's get into this. I wrote down some questions.
Okay. Wait, we're just jumping in like that? We're not going to do like a...
Like, do you want to talk about who you are?
Yeah.
Who are you, Artem?
Well, my name is Artem Komarov. I am 30 years old, becoming 31 in just about a week. I got married a week ago, and Brock was the MC at my wedding. And I am deep in baby fever. We're probably going to start trying in about 6 to 9 months. As soon as I finish a renovation on my house, which is a famous thing that people say before they have kids.
My name is Brock Brewer. I currently have a 9-month-old kid, Bear.
Is that his Christian name?
That is his Christian name, I guess. I'm currently on paternity leave for the next 3 months or so.
Yeah, just jump in. Okay, all right, hit me with some questions. Let's make this exciting.
So I guess the first question is pretty some softballs here. Why do you want to be a dad?
That was your softball. Oh God, I don't want to
get started from here.
I'm so scared to get the hard ones because I'm ready for it. I don't know. That's
too much disposable income.
I have
and free time.
No, I'm an entrepreneur. I have zero money and zero disposable time. I'm literally in the worst possible position to have children right now because I met the person who's important to me because. With my wife, it makes sense. And again, I do have baby fever. I've now decided that I'm going to care about kids all the time and love them. It suddenly happened like 6 months ago, probably.
Before that, were you largely indifferent to children or?
I had assumed that I would, way before this, before I even got married, I had assumed that I was going to be a freewheeling bachelor well into like my late 30s.
You're going to be that guy.
That guy, yeah. The terrible guy. I don't know. Do we have any friends like that?
We have friends that are single, but they largely give off the idea that they would prefer to be in a relationship.
Right. So
they're not like freewheeling bachelors who are like, this party will never end.
Yeah.
But, you know, I really think that's a blind spot in our friend group.
I thought I was going to take bachelorhood back. Like, really just own it and be confident with it.
And you were going to be that guy.
I was going to be that guy. Yeah, exactly. I was going to fill that gap in the roster. And then I met a wonderful woman and didn't look back from that.
Now you're just like babies all the time. I'm just like, you get, biological clock is ticking. I need some babies.
I have actually thought about this. I feel like with kids, it's a little bit like that when you're like in your mid-20s and like a lot of the people are single and then... friends start to like get into really serious relationships. Brock, you're smirking at me because you've been in a relationship for like 10 years. But the thing is like pairing off seems to happen very much at a really close proximity to each other. It's not like it's all spread out. Like over the course of 2 years, all of our friends have gotten paired off and married.
Yeah, no, for sure. There's something, it definitely accelerates when my friends hit 30. They're like, they don't just date, they get married pretty quick.
I also would say that you having a kid had a big impact. I thought we were going to just like live forever, man. And then you done got a child and he's adorable.
But like, are you just like interested in having a kid? Because it's like, seems like other people are having kids at this time of age.
Oh, you know, I always do things for that reason. I've owned a majority of Kanye West's outfits, mostly because of Kanye West.
I mean, Kanye's got 3 now, so yeah, I'm
way behind him, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, if Kanye can be cool with kids, why can't you? Do you worry then that, like, having a kid will make you less cool? Like, is this, you know, is this the end of, you know? Like, do you see yourself as a cool person now?
Yeah, I feel like I'm living my best life. I just entered my 30s. I'm married to a person I love. I have a nice house. I have a tiny amount of disposable income for going out. But yeah, I feel pretty cool. I just assume, part of me knows that it's going to disappear, and part of me just assumes that somehow it won't, magically.
Like, your house is basically like a Scandinavian art gallery. Like, are you worried what happens to that when, like, children's things are everywhere? What happens to your aesthetic?
I somehow assume my child will just be polite and will, like, not scat. He'll just be so diligent, even at a young age. It's going to go clean up and then, like, holding up his head and crawling.
Just still learn clean up first.
Yeah, he'll just learn clean up first, I assume.
Yeah, that's
what that not the case, Brock? What's going to happen to me? Tell me, so what did you think before? I feel like this is part of the dynamic of the show, which is I have all my assumptions about what I'm going to be like as a dad. You just had your assumptions.
Yeah, and a staggering 9 months experience. It's sad a little that I'm your most experienced dad friend. What did I think? Yeah, I think I worried about all of that. Like, you know, like, what will having a kid do to how I view myself? And can I still, like, you know, consider myself this, like, you know, hip guy that lives in the city and can do all this stuff and, you know, can, like, have all these great experiences if I, you know, have, like, a kid I need to worry about? And, like, it really changes how you view yourself.
Do you worry it changes how other people view you? Because I have to say, like, as your friend, I, you know, I don't know if I really see you any differently.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, how do people see me? How do strangers react when they find out I have a kid, you know? Like,
so women are no longer throwing themselves at you because you've got a child. It's ruined your dating game.
It's, you know, it really harsh. It's my dating game. When people are like, oh, come to this cool party. They're like, oh, you've got a kid. I guess you can't do fun things anymore. There is that worry. There certainly is. Like, how will you be perceived?
We'll
and certainly there's like, and like certainly there's like a reality to that where like you want to go do things, but you know, you have to figure out childcare and you need to be there for your kid first.
Okay, well, we just went through this. So I as of the time of this recording, I just got married 4 days ago, 5 days ago this Saturday. You came to my wedding. You didn't bring your child. Your child had babysitting that day, but a lot of other people brought their kids. Was it hard, like, to get parental care in Toronto?
Oh, yeah, it was. It was a lot of work to organize that, actually. Like,
I mean, I screwed you over. I invited your in-laws, so they...
Yeah, you invited... You know everyone I know, so there was no one to really take care. But, yeah, it was hard. My sister-in-law had to come in the morning, and then my mom had to drive in, you know, from about 3 hours away to do, like, overnight. And there was a lot of, like, logistics involved in getting it done, and, like... You know, and in a sense, I'm actually very fortunate because I have a lot of friends and a lot of family that are willing to do stuff like this. But certainly, like, everything, whenever you want to do things, nothing's really casual. You really have to, like, plan it out ahead of time and really figure out childcare.
I was thinking about the show. I was thinking about big themes that I want to cover. And one of them is, what is, you know, a new father's perspective on children? And how do we feel about it? And what's the lens we see it through? I think it's tempting to see the challenges of childcare as the challenges of, like, project management. And that seems like something not only that you'd be good at, but, like, you know, it's appealing to a guy to be like, I'm going to project manage the fuck out of this thing. You just took over as a full-time parent. Are you still confident about that?
Yeah, I am. I do think there's a lot of that of just, like, you know, I can kind of... You know, there's better ways of doing things, or, you know, I can kind of figure out ways. I do think, you know, my kid is a very easy kid. Like, I've started taking him to a couple classes. I took him to, like, a baby gym class on Monday, you know, just to work on his walking and, you know, general dexterity and strength.
I'm laughing because that's very appropriate for Brock. Brock is my friend that I met... Like, going to... Well, actually asking him that I know nothing about working out in a gym, and then being like, could you explain it to me? Because he seemed to just live there while we were at Western. So this seems very appropriate for you, like, character-wise.
Yeah, and, you know, it was a really interesting class. Or he also went to, like, a swim class yesterday. So he had his first swim class. And Bear is not good at, like, any of those things. But Bear is the best at being happy. He is the happiest baby in the class all the time, by a good margin.
Who was the baby that was really good at doing stuff?
Oh man, there was a 6-month-old there. So Bear's 9 months, and the class is really supposed to be for like 9 months, like 15 months. Kids that are transitioning from like walking, like crawling and walking, it's about to like increase mobility skills.
Okay.
But this kid's like a prodigy, man. He's 6-month-old, he's walking around, he's crawling over things. I don't know.
Do you feel like do you feel jealousy if you see that? Guys are competitive. Look, like guys are competitive. We fight and argue all the time. This is like our friendship. So
oh,
do you
for
feel
sure.
competitive if you see these kids?
For sure. You're always like, and as a parent, you're always like, oh man, like, you know, how's my, and like, you know, like your kids, like, you know, it all evens out and kids will catch up.
Well, there's a good article I read about parents. This is Michael Lewis. He was writing about his experience as a dad, and he similarly was kind of like not sure whether to be stressed about stuff, but then found himself being stressed, and his kid wasn't getting properly potty trained, and then for a little while wasn't properly walking either. And he was like, it's not like you see a lot of adults just stumbling down streets shitting themselves. Like, it seems to just come out in the wash in the bigger scheme of things. So you see, rationally, you must know that your kid's going to be like, for the most part.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I do know that. And then the thing is, he's happy all the time. And like, it's something that all the instructors love him, because he's they comment often, like, you know, why is your kid always like this? Why is your kid so happy? I do not know. I do not know why.
Amphetamines. He's always up.
Yeah, he's always like, you know, having a great time.
So,
but I feel like that's made it a little bit easier for Jen and I. He also sleeps really well. So that's, I think maybe I've had like a bit of an artificial situation in terms of what it's like to care for a child.
Well, okay, so that actually brings me to a question I had prepared. Whenever I used to start jobs, I would sort of do information interviews with people who were doing the work similar to mine or had done it before. And the question was always, you know, if you were going back in time a year before, like right as you started, what are the hard-earned lessons? What are the things you thought you would worry about and then you actually ended up worrying about as you did the job?
I think it was very similar to, I mean, it actually in a lot of ways it was a lot easier than I thought it would be. Like, you know, I
wait,
worried.
So you over worried?
Well, I thought it would be more disruptive to my life than it really was. Like, you know, he slept a lot. He slept pretty well from the beginning. He was very like well mannered. Made it really easy to like take him to restaurants and, you know, like go places with him pretty much right from the get go. And then I would say that something that, you know, you can think you know, but like it's very difficult to know until you're experiencing. It's just like the all-encompassingness of being a parent. Like the fact that you're always a parent, that you are constantly taking care of a kid. And you think you know what that means before you become a parent, but you really don't.
So that one, I totally agree with you. So I just went through this. Like, I was really excited about the ceremony and getting married, and I thought I knew what the ceremony was going to feel like, but then something about the ceremony makes you take that long view of life. Like, suddenly, like, we had, like, an argument afterwards, and I found myself kind of feeling like I'm not only arguing my, like, BS point that I care about in this moment, but then, like, thinking, like, oh, what are the ramifications of this argument, like, 30 years out? And that's, like, I never had that perspective before. Like, literally nothing has physically changed in me. And
like,
suddenly
did that make you more stubborn or less?
More stubborn.
That is the exact opposite that I was hoping you would take from that ceremony. things don't matter, right? I'm like, you know, you guys have love. That's all that really matters.
I don't know. You're not my only source of advice about being a husband. No, it was more about, I feel like on smaller issues, I try to be fairly compromising as a partner. This story is not making sense. You want to explain what it was about? Okay, this is the story. Clearly, this is the juiciest part because I'm avoiding explaining what it is. So, as you know, whenever I travel, my asshole betrays me. My Achilles heel is my Achilles colon, I guess is the way you would put it. Sometimes I don't like pooping in foreign
bathrooms. This is literally a fight about pooping?
This is a fight about pooping, which makes it much more uncomfortable. And my friend was visiting from out of town, and they bought... Are you familiar with the product Poopori, whatever it is? It's like a spray on...
Potpourri.
Yeah, Potpourri, right? Okay, so the one with hilarious commercials and everything else. Okay, so there's a secondary product called the Squatty Potty. This seems like you'd probably know about this. Like, the whole idea that you're supposed to poop in, like, a squatting position because our ancestors pooped in a squatting position.
It's supposed to be healthier, yeah.
It's supposed to be healthier. So my friend... we were kind of joking about this, and he was like, yeah, you know what? I went to a house, someone had it there. It was awesome. We were very hungover, so I don't know how enthusiastic he is really in fact, but he was very emphatic. He was like, this thing is amazing. You gotta get this. This is an amazing piece of technology. It really does improve a thing you do every day. So, I went on Amazon. It's like $40 to order it. It was actually $40 to order the regular thing and $50 to order the nicer one made out of teak wood, which is the one I got.
Okay.
Because my house does look like a Scandinavian museum. And then I ordered it. It is like an embarrassing piece of technology to have in your house. It depends how you own it, but I feel like, you know, not everyone's comfortable with poop jokes. So, it's sort of like, it can be embarrassing. I did this without consulting my wife. As you know, she likes good design in homes. Even if the Squatty Potty is made out of teak wood, there's no way it fits into the overall decor of my home.
Did you offer to paint it white?
No. It was very. You have to see it. It's really nice. It's like a good piece of design already. It looks very good. And so she got mad at me, and I would have probably, in a typical conversation, said, like, yeah, you're right, this is ridiculous. But it turned into this whole discussion about, like recognizing the worst parts of me as well. You know, I'm a package deal. I need my assistance with pooping.
Yeah, no, that's... I'm with Eloise on this one. That's a shameful thing. You should definitely at least consult her.
Is that what you're... Okay, so you're also, like, Brock has the advantage of having been... How long are you guys dated and married? Combined?
It's like 11, 12 years now.
Okay, so 11, 12 years to my 3. Coming up on 4 in March. So, not a long time. With my 3 years, is that... What's your take on that? You feel like that was just a poor gamesmanship on my part? Like, I should have done the pre-consult before?
I mean, the answer is always, yeah, communication is always an important thing with your wife. There's a wise man who once said, I love that I can always communicate with Eloise, no matter the situation. And, you know, perhaps some communication before that situation really would have helped him out.
It was poorly played on my part. I understand that.
Or no, it's not that. It's that you have your weird, like, pooing accessory in your nice bathroom now. Guests don't want to see that. You know, that's weird.
Well, it hasn't arrived yet. Look, I feel like,
you
don't...
cancel it, or you're just like, no, this is my... We're having this in our house.
No, I stuck to my guns. Well, because, okay, look, I mean, this is... I want to try... First, I want to try this thing. If this is going to change my life, frankly speaking, you guys are all going to look like fools for even doubting me on this argument.
People with, like, too elaborate bathroom rituals are always weird.
Yeah, well, I don't know, like, we'd have, like, a...
Pause for a second, sorry. Sorry about that, I had to go get my kid, Bear. He just got up from his nap, and he's now in the room with us, so you might hear him in the background.
That's perfect, I feel like that sort of captures the spirit of the show. Dad fitness is one of the topics that I think, like, could be something we cover in whatever shape this takes. Do you have any pro tips about trying to stay energized while you're trying to do a ripping workout in the morning? Hold on. I feel like I'm actually making it seem less important, but, like, you started doing gym at, like, 6:30 in the morning was when you were going? You were, like,
yeah,
crazy hour.
Going at 6:30 in the morning, yeah.
So that means your gym is not around the corner, so you were up at, like, what, 5:30?
Usually, like, 6 to make it to 6:30 gym. So I get up, have a protein shake out the door, bike to work, right to the gym.
Is that the trick? Just protein shake and determination?
I mean, the trick is always will, Artem. It always comes down to determination. There is no other trick.
For the listeners, Brock
just
is
want it.
Brock is giving me his famous judgmental cut eye. I have a very on and off relationship with the gym. I don't think I'm fat. I don't want the listener to think of me as being a fat guy. I just Brock's in there 5-6 times a week, and I really got into cycle fit recently. We got a cycle in the house. That was really nice.
That seems, that's pleasant. Regardless, it's important to me, and that was like one of the things I found to be a bigger change.
So what do you do now? So this is, you get up now. Now you're responsible for the child. Jen's going to work and school at the same time.
Well, I'm glad you asked. You know, I've had to figure out a number of ways to work out with Bear. 2 days a week, they have child binding at my gym, but only 2 days a week. So I've had to go down to just 2 days of weights.
Okay, all right. So you walk there, and then they mind the kid. Because YMCA offers this service too, so it's always that was actually funny enough. One of the first times that I realized that I was starting to really think about kids is when Eloise and I got our YMCA membership, and they started explaining about like childcare, and I didn't stop them. I was like, "This is fascinating. Yeah, this is great. Good to know. Like, I really actually cared."
They do a fantastic job there. Yeah, and it's nice. It's nice too for Bear to like kind of help socialize them, get them out with other kids. I do a lot of classes with Bear as well, but I feel like that's like a good thing because at least twice a week he gets out for specifically, you know, seeing other kids.
Okay, well, so who do you encounter as you're out and about? Like, who is out on during the daytime when it comes to parents at the gym? Like, let's use that example. Who do you see there?
It is mostly moms. All the classes I do, I'm the only dad. Like, fathers on pat leave is a bit of a rarity. I was actually recently set up with a blind date with another dad. Basically, a wife had heard that there might be another dad on pat leave, and then she didn't really know my wife, but another intermediate wife had heard that I was on pat leave. So they reached out through Facebook, and the guy was like, "Hey, man, want to meet me at a brewery to have some drinks during the day?"
That seems like a very small market.
Yeah, it was great. And then, like, I went to the bar, and it was, like, a lot of, like, "Hey, are you Brent's? Are you Brent's?" And just, like, it's like, "Oh, you also have a kid? Are you free during the day? We should do stuff."
So, that's surprising for me to hear. That's a great example of something that I think will be easier than it probably will be. Like, a takeaway that I've seen just from you being a stay-at-home dad for a brief while, because I think you kind of experience the same thing people go through when they, like, you know, change jobs or, you know, take time off. Like, it's kind of the weird loneliness of, like, that Wednesday afternoon when no one's around. Like, you kind of don't have anybody to talk to. But I honestly assumed that in Canada, like, pat leave would be a lot more common. But you're saying, no, like, this is not, everywhere you go, it's just moms.
Yeah, most classes I've gone, I mean, I've yet to really see a lot of dads at, like, a lot of the things I do. Or if they do, they tend to be there with their partners. Like, they had a day off, they work from home, and they're going out with their wives.
How long are you into pat leave now?
This is some 6 weeks, I guess.
Okay, so 6 weeks.
My wife took off the first 4 weeks, so.
How long was Jen off?
She took 9 months off, like 8 months, and then a month of vacation where we overlapped. So that was my first month of pat leave.
Yeah.
Sort
of passing the torch.
Yeah, and then this is my first, like, month all by myself.
Okay, all right, so she's...
I'm in my third week.
But Bear's growing so quickly that, like, him at, like, 1 to 9 is then radically different. You're sort of catching all the good milestones. So this is another topic of conversation. I know you've got your list too, so feel free to jump into it. But one of the things that I wanted to cover, you know, fitness is one, like, sort of technology and gear for dads is another one.
Just got a running stroller. I went for a 7K run with Bear today.
Okay, so I'll save the next one. What was that like? How do you feel about it? You bought it used, right?
It was actually like a hand-me-down. I get a lot of hand-me-downs. That one was from my brother. Yeah, it's pretty good. It's definitely harder. My times are not as good, but you know what? It's nice to be able to do things with Bear, and he seems to like the run.
Wait, did you expect to match your time that you used to do pre-Bear?
Or like, I wasn't sure how much slower it would be, you know?
What kind of percentage loss are you looking at?
I think I'm like about a minute slower per kilometer.
That's pretty good. I mean, you're carrying an extra, I don't know what Bear is now weight-wise, but like...
Yeah, and a stroller and stuff.
Well, that's the thing. Like, you don't have your nimbleness, right? It's all corners and kind of shaving off those seconds. That's pretty good, man.
Yeah, thank you. And he seems to like it.
This is the other thing that I wanted to get. This is like a core conversation about the whole podcast. What do you look up to as far as parenting goes? So when it comes to like strong moms, strong women, that's like an interesting area that I feel like there's a lot of conversation about. And I, like, before doing the show, I tried to do a little bit of research. So I read up on Fatherly for a little bit. Like, we got a bunch of books when we got married. I found myself, and maybe this is not true of the market, I found myself coming up short. I totally didn't know. I was like, who is a great dad that I know, except for, like, direct parents? Like, I was like, Ryan Reynolds? I feel like maybe he's killing it as a dad.
Well, I mean, on Twitter, it's certainly hilarious. Yeah, it's a good question. Yeah, I don't know. And I don't know if there's a lot of it. Like, the paradigm of a dad is, I think, really, like, shifting a little bit.
It's definitely in flux.
Yeah. Like, the idea of, like, becoming a dad. There's a really great documentary. It's on Netflix, actually, right before I had Bear, when I knew I was having a boy. And it's called The Masks We Live In.
Okay.
The gist of the documentary is that, you know, our conception of masculinity and the way boys are raised, they're raised without really tools to deal with their emotions. Like, emotions are something that is, like, pushed deep down inside, and it's not acknowledged. And then boys kind of grow up without tools to really deal with their emotions, and then you see, like, them, they lash out with violence, or they can't form relationships, and they don't really have these models to know how to, you know, interact in the world, with the world in a positive way. So I guess part of it, like, from raising a boy, like letting him know, it's okay to, like, have your feelings, and it's okay to, like, you know, express these feelings. One of the things that I've been very surprised at with talking with other, like, my friends that are about to have kids, is just, like, I can never take a pat leave. My workplace culture would never support that. Like, the guys I work with are so proud, even the ones that are dads are so proud of, like, I never see my kid, I make money. You know,
that's
like,
weird.
They're just like, look, that's what it means to be a man. You know, you don't see your kid, you know, you earn money for your family, and that's how you be a good dad.
It's an interesting point. So at the wedding, I had this really weird sense where, because of just the nature of the event, I had a right to express how happy I was in an earnest way. So I could be earnest with people and just be like, it's so lovely to see you, you're so important to me, and not feel weird about it. And I really enjoyed it. And then realizing that, like, I don't do enough of that really in my life. I don't have the tools to kind of be as, like, as earnest or as open as I want to be, as vulnerable as I want to be, maybe.
Well, because, like, as a man, you're often taught that, having feelings makes you weak, or that, like, expressing that vulnerability is something that you get made fun of by your other male friends.
Yeah, which is interesting because, like, there's an element of male culture that is kind of fun that way. Like, an ability to kind of play fight with you guys as my friends is pretty important to me. I like it. It's sort of, it gets a certain part of my personality out. But then I feel like, you know, it's taken us as a group a long time to be able to kind of communicate earnestly about things. And even then, we don't do the best job of it. Like, this is part of the reason for the show is kind of being able to actually talk about this stuff in a venue where we can communicate it and we have a reason to. And otherwise not being able to do it. Now, it's interesting to hear you say about the idea of, like, not being able to take even pat leave off. That's really difficult. Do those guys, when, like, you know, I'm sure they're kind of a generalized, you know, group of people, but, like, did some of them, like, do they make just the determination, like, fuck it, I don't care. If at work that's what I'm considered weak for it, like, I don't give a shit, I'm just going to take time off.
No, many of them buckle and no one takes it off. Like, even if it's offered at their workplace, they're like, some of my friends are like, I can take time off if I want, but you never do it culturally. Like, it just wouldn't be accepted.
That's tough. I feel like
you're not a company guy. You're not like the right type of guy.
But that's such, like, a dead metaphor in our, like, in a lot of work culture. The company man is kind of like,
but it's really not. But it's like, you know, are you like a serious minded guy? Like, are you the type of guy who's ambitious, who's driven?
Oh man, yeah. No, that's a good question. It's a good question. You know, like, I'm starting my own company right now. When I talk to investors, I actually talk about the fact that I'm doing a lot of the, like, what I feel like is the pre-work and, like, the hardest part of the company before I have a child. So I guess I'm sort of feeding into that idea. I also feel like I'm laying the groundwork to be able to say later, like, yep, and, like, look, now we're kind of out of this phase and I'm having a kid and, like, this is happening. I'm taking time out. Like, look, but on the other hand, they're like, someone like Mark Zuckerberg, the guy is at the head of an empire, like, you know, what is it, $300 billion company. He took, I think, like, 3 months off, I think was what he took off. I assume in his world, like, 10 things break every day. So 3 months is like a huge amount of time for a head of like one of the largest companies in the world to take off. I feel like that didn't get enough coverage. Not in the sense that he deserves the reward, but just like as a topic of conversation.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's kind of sad that that's noteworthy.
But like you can't imagine 50 years ago. I think that's what I'm trying to get at with the idea of like the company man. Like you can't imagine like Jack Welch or like the head of like, you know, big oil company taking 3 months of pat leave. Like just not like that's not even something that's ever would have been discussed in a previous time.
Like a head of big oil company still don't. Like that's like that industry, I'm sure you that's something that wouldn't happen.
I think there's a real difference between like different sectors. So like finance for sure I think tends to not allow time off. And the perception is like you're out of the race if you're out. I think real estate and like any kind of like natural gas, oil, all that stuff, you're in government. In government, I feel like it's kind of the opposite, right? You have
pat leave. I certainly worried about being perceived as, you know, not serious or not a like not an ambitious employee if I did take my paternity leave. But it's kind of a different environment. It's like it's, you know, 60-70% female depending on the ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys that the men that I did talk to were like, you know, especially given the time, you should like there's a bit of a dad's club where they're like, no, like, you know, you're never gonna be on your deathbed regretting the like 4 months you took pat leave and spent like this very like pivotal time with your child versus like, you know, the 4 months of work you could have done, which I mean, everybody's replaceable, right?
Well, I mean, I think that's what's so surprising to me, because like as millennials, we are terrible employees, apparently, and have just destroyed commerce and business, and also somehow created it. I'm not sure how that works, but like it's not like any of us that really believe in job stability. Like you're, I feel like you're kind of on the outlier group with that, with government. But you know, generally speaking, like I did not trust. And I worked in government before too, so. But after that, I never really trusted job security. I've never really believed in it. Is there something your work could have done to encourage you to take time off? Like, you probably got, like, the standard, like, HR explanation of what you're entitled to. But was there, like, a manager or, like, a director who could have, like, gone out of his way to be like, hey, you know, you should take this time off? It sounds like there was, like you said, like, a bit of a guy's club. Dad's club, I should say.
My manager is amazing. He was very much, like, I mean, he was also, like, we're going to miss the work you're doing. But he was very much like, you should take this. This is a really important time for you. And I actually was only like seconded to my job. I didn't actually have my job when I told him I was going to take this time off.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually applied for my job. I interviewed for my job the day before I started my paternity leave. So he gave me my current job knowing that I would be gone for the first 4 months of it.
That's fairly supportive.
I mean,
that's hugely supportive, right?
That's very supportive.
I think like that's about
full
as far
credit.
That's about as far as you could get.
Yeah, full credit to them.
Well, look, I think
in,
that maybe
specifically
that probably goes back to what we were saying before, which is like there's exceptions, and I work in tech, so tech suggests it's perhaps the most liberal place to work. But then, you know, everyone forgets that, like, I think at some point either Google or Facebook offered to freeze women's eggs while they were working as engineers. So, you know, take your pick of what examples you want to talk about there. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of, like, toxic stuff happening with that memo that circulated in Google. And, you know, just a lot of weird sexist stuff that happens in that industry. So I don't think it's perfect in any sense of the word. But overall, like, male culture, I think, like, does not really have an outlet to suggest that you are somehow doing a good job if you take time off for your kids. One final question for our first reel, our talent reel.
Yeah, this is good. I like those. We're doing so well.
Okay. All right. So what's your question?
My question was, so your name is Artem Komarov. You're a Russian guy.
Yeah.
Living in Canada. Although you moved when you were quite young.
When I was 9, yeah.
How much of like your Russian heritage are you going to introduce is that something that is important to you?
So I just talked to Eloise about this today.
Oh, fun. Okay, here
we
go.
So as you know, we started doing baby names. And for
girls... Is there a lot of, like, Ivans and Igors in there? Or are you going to give them, a more...
Please.
Anglo name?
Ivan and Igors, and we're going to get a lot of angry emails from Ivans and Igors, is the John Smith of Russian names. Actually, at this point, Artem is one of the John Smiths of Russian names. It became quite popular. But we'd always thought for the name, the kids' names for the girl, we wanted Jacqueline Gerard, which is, I think, the grandmother of Eloise. But today, when we talked about it, I kind of was like, you know, I don't know. I feel like I'm going to have an opinion about the child when I see him or her. So if for my baby boy, I always thought about just naming him Vladimir, which is my dad's name. So because he passed away about 4 years ago now. So that's kind of a bit of a nod to my cultural roots. But in terms of like introducing them to the cultural stuff, I mean, my mother mostly speaks Russian. She sort of got limited. You've met her a bunch now. She's got limited English communication skills. Just enough, but not, you know, not huge. She'll talk to him in Russian, for sure. I will talk to him in Russian because it just seems like a helpful thing to have. Like, why not? An extra language when you're young is good. And then, I don't know, we don't tend to follow a lot of traditions. So for the rest of it, I'm not sure. I don't know if there's that much Russianness in me to pass on. Like, there's foods and stuff that I wanted to try and kind of understand, but I'm pretty distant from the culture.
Yeah, and, like, what happens when he turns, like, you know, like, 12, 13, 14, and he starts to, like, really find himself, looking to find himself in the world, and he, like, starts to ask you about, like, Russian things, like, you know?
Well, so, you asked me very right at the start, like, why have kids, or, like, what am I excited about, or what am I thinking about it, and part of it is being able to share my, like, ethnicity as a Canadian Russian, Russian Canadian with my child, in the sense that I haven't gone back since I moved here, but if my child wanted to understand Russia better, I would travel with them.
You also don't do a lot of like Russian Canadian like cultural events or
no, and I mean you and I made up a tradition for the wedding of plate breaking, which is not Russian. Every piece of research indicated that like my mom had done it at her wedding, but then like it might be Greek or Jewish, but definitely not Russian.
Greek. It's definitely a Greek. The Greeks apparently don't do anymore. They say it's just for tourists. It's not actually a Greek tradition anymore.
Oh, God.
They also... But you know what? It was a hit at the wedding. People loved it.
And when we got that totally wrong. We thought they wouldn't. And they loved it. It was great.
You know, it felt authentic to your guests.
It did.
It was, you know, and to be fair, it was authentic to your family.
Bears making pig snorting noises.
So what happened was when we were teaching Bear how to eat, babies learn to eat choke a lot. And Bear learned that if he made choking noises, he would get more attention. So when he wants attention or he doesn't like something now or he wants something, he'll make a fake choking sound. Which is horrifying. It's the most like
gangster shit ever.
Peter crying wolf you've ever heard. And then you're always like, gee, you're not really choking, Bear. You're not really choking. And I'm always worried. In this case, he's just standing here staring at me, so he's clearly not.
Well, I have to, like, I sometimes it's nice to highlight what's happening in the room is that as Brock is explaining this, a big grin breaks out across Bear's face like he knows what he's doing. Which maybe he does. But babies are, like, master manipulators. Like, look, they can't crawl, they can't walk, they can't, like, do anything for themselves, and yet they live in an adult world that they somehow survive in. I mean, he picks up on those signals fast. He's a natural salesman.
Yeah, no, it's true. Anything he knows, it's because you somehow taught it to him.
And I'm allowed to say that. I'm in the salesman club. I did that for years. I have the card and everything.
Yeah, I don't know how I could have paid him less attention when he's choking, though. That was a tough one.
That was
just a clever play on his part.
That was a real bid. You can't do much with that. All right, we're going to wrap it up here and see what happens. And keep recording. Bear, say goodbye.
Can't do
the one time you're silent, you monster. All right, we'll see you guys later.